A listener's note. Some episodes of this podcast include descriptions of violence, sudden death, and other traumatic experiences. We do not recommend this podcast for young listeners.
One of my favorite things that I get to do in life, besides being a dad and being a firefighter and being a paramedic, is the fact that I get to teach. I never would have considered myself to be a teacher. I just like to talk. Being able to talk about my experiences and what works for me and what doesn't work for me is amazing to me.
What's even more amazing is that Chad Hoefel answered his career calling as a 16-year-old student who wanted to get out of turning in an incomplete homework assignment.
I was working nights and going to high school during the day, obviously, and I was very tired. And so by chance, I happened to fall asleep in one of my classes, unfortunately, and I had an assignment due in class. At the end of the period, I happened to wake up from my much needed rest, and I didn't have my assignment done. And the announcements came over the loudspeaker and said, anybody interested in being a fire cadet, please report to the office. And it was the end of the day announcements. So I proceeded to hastily get to the office just to get me out of getting in trouble for not doing my homework that period. I started a cadet on Stillman Fire Department. When I started here, we were 100% a volunteer fire department. We got paid a steak dinner once a year. That's what we got paid, which was great. And over the years, we advanced to a paid-on-call fire department, or a volunteer paid fire department, essentially, then a paid-on-call fire department.
Chad worked his way up through the ranks, and now, more than 25 years later, he is chief of the Stillman Fire District. The district responds to hundreds of emergency calls across a 65-square-mile area of northern Illinois. About 600 miles east, in Kearney, Nebraska, Ryan Wadalevich is just beginning his career. Instead of training and mentoring firefighters, Ryan is squaring off against an even tougher audience, elementary school students.
I am full of energy, and I want to do so many great things. And those fifth graders, those fourth graders are right where I want them. They already know how to read. They already know how to write. They're at that stage in their life where they're eager to like learn new things. They're eager to go outside and to explore and to, you know, to learn about anything. And the way that you teach those things keeps their engagement.
Ryan is a substitute teacher now, but plans to lead his own classroom when he earns his degree in education in 2022. And there's little doubt that Fire Chief Chad Hoefel will be there for the graduation ceremony. You see, Chad is Ryan's big buddy. And the story of how these two different teachers came together is the subject of this episode of the Grief in Progress podcast. Ryan Wadalevich's father, Kenny, was a captain with the Wood River Volunteer Fire Department in Nebraska. A dedicated member of the fire service, Kenny earned the department's Firefighter of the Year Award in 1996. He was also a devoted husband to Melissa and dad to sons Ryan and Matt. Kenny died when Ryan was just 4 years old.
Somebody asked me, you know, what's a memory of your dad that you can remember, but it has to be one that no one's ever told you? And I sat there and I just froze because I didn't have an answer. Because I have none of my own memories. Everything that I know about him is just what I've been told the past 17 years.
Here's what Ryan has learned about his father's line of duty death.
The early morning hours of February 14th of 04, that was just Valentine's Day, the department was dispatched to a structure fire in a single-story residence. Upon the arrival, the firefighters discovered that there was a working fire and received the reports of an elderly woman that was trapped inside. My dad and Bobby took action into the residence to search and rescue.
Without warning, the roof collapsed. Fire Captains Heminger and Wadalevich were trapped inside for approximately 17 minutes before crews were able to remove them and transport them to the hospital. Bobby Heminger succumbed to his injuries the following day. Kenny Wadalevich died 2 days later.
I really didn't start asking questions till about the end of my elementary school years, the beginning of my middle school years, because I was to the point where I could remember, and I was to the point in age where, you know, I began to wonder what it's like to have a dad, or like, what was he like? I was at the age where I could remember what happened.
Jenny Woodall, grief specialist with the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, says that grieving a loved one's death evolves as people do.
And we talk about this with children a lot, but I think it's true with adults as well, that grief becomes part of personal development. So if you're four, when you lose your dad, you grieve as a four-year-old. But when you're 12, you grieve what it means to be a 12-year-old whose dad died. And when you're 20, that means something different again. And so it becomes part of the developmental process over a lifetime, that that loss is part of the story.
My mom has always been the one to help with those difficult questions. And, you know, those memories that she shared with me, and, you know, when we had those talks, that's what's with me still today.
In Illinois, Chad Hofel learned about the foundation from an email.
So one day I was in my office. It was early on as a fire chief. I got a whole bunch of emails, and there was one that said, NFFF partners with Hal Bruno Kids Camp. Anyone who knows me knows that I am a kid fanatic. I have, you know, everybody on the fire department brings their kids to see me. I'm most enthusiastic about being a father. Every kid that comes to the fire station gets a new Hot Wheel car or something. I just like being around kids. So I read the title to this and I opened it up. And at first I thought it was a spam email because it said, we'll pay for your training, we'll send you for this training, and then you can go to this camp for kids who have lost a loved one in the line of duty. It kind of spoke to me in a way that I thought somebody really either knows me deep down and is trying to fool me that this is a real thing, or I just hit the jackpot with something that I think will be amazing. I opened up the email and I signed up, and I was within minutes I was signed up. I thought this was going to be the greatest thing. And sure enough, I got a message back that said, hey, we're going to send you this training, and then we're going to put on the first ever kids bereavement camp for just kids who have lost a parent in the line of duty. I ended up flying out to Virginia for a 6-hour training course, flew back the next day, and I was set to go to our first camp.
We hold a training each year for volunteers specifically designed to recruit members of the fire service so that our camp has a real flavor of fire service. I was at the training when Chad came to be trained for camp, and I do remember that he really stood out as someone who is going to be an incredible mentor to a young person.
Volunteers train with bereavement specialists before camp starts. This was an eye-opener for Chad.
I expected that children that were grieving were just going to be sad. I just went in and thinking, these kids are going to be sad. And I'm a happy guy, so I'm going to be able to fix them. They're going to tell me that I can't fix these kids, but I'm a pretty happy guy. And so they're going to like it. I really got taken back by the fact that I was wrong, and I expected something that didn't happen. So it was a great learning experience for me, just to be there to learn about what I didn't know.
Ryan and his family first came across the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation when they attended Memorial Weekend in Emmitsburg, Maryland in 2005. Ryan's mother, Melissa, whom he often endearingly refers to as Mama Woe, signed him up for the first camp for children of fallen firefighters.
The whole process works out with Comfort Zone Camp. They basically match you with a buddy so that you more so have a mentor over the weekend.
Filling out the profile, when you fill it out, they want you to be honest what your interests are. And so I had to be very honest about what I was into. And it turns out that Comfort Zone knows what they're doing. I don't think there could have been a better match with our personalities and what we do. So their process works. So they encourage you to call the parent, introduce yourself, letting them know that you've been paired with their child. And then if the parent feels comfortable, then you can talk to their child. And so I talked to Ryan's mom for, probably a few minutes. And then she said, hold on, Ryan's right here. Let me get him for you. And at that moment, I just kind of locked up. I was like, oh, my goodness, I'm actually going to have a conversation with this kid. What if he asks me a question and I don't know the answer? You know, I was for probably the first time in a long time in my life, I was really nervous. because I didn't know what this, you know, this kid was going to say.
I got to talk to Chad briefly before we came to camp. So he called about, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 weeks before camp and talked to my mom for a little bit just to kind of have some background. And then we talked for a little bit.
We just chit-chatted for a few minutes. I said, hey, are you excited about camp? Do you think you're going to enjoy it? What are you going to bring with you and so forth? Because some kids don't want to go to camp. Their parents tell them, hey, I think this is something you need, which I'm sure Ryan's mom told him he needed this, but he's a pretty social kid. And so, well, he was a social kid now. Now he's a social adult. But going through that process and having a conversation with the child and the child's parent is really kind of humbling if you don't know what to expect. So they encourage everybody to do it. And it was a pretty amazing process. You make that phone call and say, hey, we'll see you in a couple weeks. And that's the last time you talk to them then until you meet at camp.
That conversation is very vague. That was a long time ago. Just realizing that we had that conversation and that conversation led to a lifelong friendship.
The interesting thing about this camp is these kids all had a tie to the fire service, and the fire service is a family. So us as big buddies all got together in lengthy waiting anticipation about meeting these kids who were already our family. They just didn't necessarily know it yet.
One unique thing about our program is that a lot of the volunteers are members of the fire service. For that weekend, our campers have access to a lot of goofy, fun-loving, supportive firefighters who are in their element being big kids at camp. And that big buddy really is the camper's person for the weekend. They have them fully to themselves as a role model, a mentor, an anchor, someone to lean on as needed.
It's not like a normal camp where you would have the first half of your day, you can pick what you want to go do, and then you have lunch, and then you can go pick what you want to do, and then we have story time and a campfire at night, and we go to bed. Camp is very scheduled, and it's for a great reason. We do games and fun stuff to get kids and the adults, honestly, really ramped up and ready to engage. And then we move to some healing circles where we all sit around, and those are led by trained healing circle leaders, counselors usually, that facilitate the grief process and facilitate conversation amongst the age group of kids that are in their healing circle. Ryan was wearing a robotics t-shirt, and at the time he was way shorter than me because he was 11 or 12. And so we started to have a conversation about robotics and so forth. And then he decided to teach me or attempt to teach me some board game that I had never played before and kind of called me out for not knowing what I was doing.
Yes, I remember that he was taller than me. And then boom, the next year I was taller than him. And it was just that interaction right away is this bald guy is my buddy for the weekend. And we kicked it off. We played Connect Four. Oh my gosh, there was a photo of us many, many years ago at our first camp of us playing Connect Four.
You know, I still have the picture in my office, but him sitting down and humbling me that I didn't know what I was doing was a great start to how that relationship was going to go for, you know, the rest of our lives of him sitting down and saying, why don't you know this? I mean, he's by far smarter than me. So, you know, thinking back to when he was a preteen, explaining to me that I didn't know what I was doing was pretty funny. So that was my first interaction with Ryan, and it was a great one, and I remember it to this day, and I still don't know how to do whatever game he was trying to teach me to do.
Yeah, he surely was playing that game wrong. And just to see the growth from that photo to where we are now in 2021. You know, that was almost 7, 8, 9 years ago. And that connection is still as strong as what it was when I beat him in Connect Four. I am just astonished and forever grateful for that connection.
Ryan and I clicked, and when those kids get there, they're anticipating things that they don't know. The very first camp, none of us knew what to expect. within the first day, we were playing a game where we had to lead each other around with our, you know, the person you were leading had their eyes closed and they had to trust where you were taking them just based off of what you were telling them. And so I remember I had a name badge on that was around a lanyard, and Ryan was walking me around by my lanyard. And I had to trust where he was telling me, and we were building trust within the first hour.
Just the jokes that we can say on each other, the things that we did with each other over the weekend, just allowed that new connection of sincerity and trust, just to kind of form. And it was like that weekend, that very first weekend of us together, just made, felt like I've known him for a whole year already. And then it just gradually got stronger and stronger and stronger, and it still stands true today. So when I attended that first camp, the last day of camp was my birthday, and we left that camp, and it was a big hush-hush surprise, and they bused us out to this fire station just southwest of the camp. They had a surprise party there for me, and the people of Hanover in Virginia, they gave me a badge, they gave me a challenge coin, they had a cake, they had balloons, they had fire trucks out, they had the flag in the air. I was like, this is what it feels like to be appreciated and to know that this is what a fire service family feels like. And after that first year, I was like, you know what, Mom, Chad was pretty cool. I want Chad again. And so then we preferenced to have Chad again. And I don't know if like that was like a thing, but we made it a thing. And so I had Chad again for that next year. And then we had him the next year and then the next year and the next year. So I was fortunate to have Chad all the years that I was there.
Ryan and Chad maintained their little buddy, big buddy friendship between camp experiences.
I never really knew, you know, what it felt like to, you know, have a fire chief look out after us. You know, just those small things that you would have thought that a picture perfect fire family would have been like. We never had that, and I never experienced that.
We've kind of looked at why firefighters do that, because if they stay involved with people like Ryan, it sometimes makes them relive that incident. And it's not that they're bad people, it's that they don't know how to cope. And they don't know how to deal with seeing Ryan's face every day and knowing that maybe they could have helped that day. Maybe they decided not to go to that call when they should have gone to that call. And for any number of reasons, it might settle with somebody in a different way.
They were there for you, but now they're not. And it's really, it feels like it's very bitter to say that. But that's just kind of the truth, that, you know, that's just how it is. And it's really unfortunate, because it's not just with me and my family. It's with fire service all across the states, that people that have lost a firefighter in the line of duty, that it's like this everywhere. You know, my friends that I've made through the foundation, you know, their hometown department does not talk to them. They don't socialize with each other. So I mean, we're experiencing this all the way across the states, and it's really unfortunate.
I work primarily with Fire Hero family programs, but I also have a hand in the fire service side of the house. And I can tell you that for firefighters who lose a fellow firefighter, it is excruciating. And when somebody dies in the line of duty, what comes up for them is guilt, both for having survived and for having let down the family. It's a personal loss for them, because they are often close friends. They literally put their lives in one another's hands, and it's something that they take very seriously.
Chad has learned from Ryan's family's experience of losing not only their husband and dad, but their entire fire family.
It makes me think that if anything ever happens like that here at my fire station, I don't want anybody's family member to ever think, man, the fire station just wasn't there for us. So Ryan's side of that story, Ryan's aspect of that story, is something that he's learned and grown from the National Fallen Firefighters, that we are there for people's families, that the group just gets it.
I think what I want people to know about the fire service is that at their best, They are helpers and fixers. They are brave and resourceful and generous. They feel things very deeply. And they are human beings who work under enormous occupational stress. They have limits, like all of us. They need support. And we are really working to change the culture in the fire service to allow people the space to seek support, to help people mitigate that stress through ongoing wellness programs that keep them emotionally and mentally fit for their jobs.
I think people just can't accept the fact that that colleague, that fireman, that firefighter, that first responder, they're gone. But even though they're gone, you need to take care of your own. And taking care of your own is the family that they left behind. And I think that that part of, okay, we have to step up and take care of this family, is just so, so hard for them. And it's even harder on us, knowing that you guys said that you were going to help us through this, and you're not.
Many of the programs that we have developed have come directly from what the community has told us they need. One example is the Taking Care of Our Own program, which is a training program for fire departments on how to plan for and handle line of duty deaths. And that really grew from a request that came from families. When we asked them, what is it that you need? One of the things they said was, teach fire departments what to do when a firefighter dies, because they really don't know quite what to do with us.
I can go to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation and I can say, this is what I'm experiencing. This is what I'm dealing with as a department, and not only as a department, but personally, what do I do? And the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation will be there for me. They will be there for my family. They will be there for my fire department. That is so comforting. And as a not only a fire department leader, but as a father and as somebody that's been to these camps, that's been to Memorial Weekend, the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation just is amazing at handling those families and those questions that everybody has to deal with when there's a line of duty death.
Big Buddies and other foundation volunteers often serve as surrogates and sounding boards for children who have lost a firefighter parent, not solely out of a sense of obligation, but because of a true connection that they've formed with their little buddies and their families.
We've seen each other many times outside of camp. It's been interesting just to see the things that we've done outside of the camp that it's just, you never would have thought that would have happened from that connection.
His mom made me a scrapbook for every year that we went to camp together. And it started out with like the scrapbook with like sliding pictures in and putting little things in there. And eventually she had the books made. So they got sent to me and they were hardcovers. Pictures of our trips, pictures of our adventures.
Mama Woe has definitely made some scrapbooks. She is a big scrapbooking queen. They always took photos at the camp. There was also a photographer there every single year. And they published these photos afterwards. And my mom took out all the good ones and made some photo books out of them. And that was always his little surprise about 2 months after camp. It took my mom about 2 months to get everything put together. And he sends me Snapchats sometimes of just sitting on his shelf, you know, just saying, thinking about you, or, you know, look at this photo, or, you know, there's just some good memories.
His family actually came up. The entire family took their Thanksgiving vacation week and came and stayed with me. And they surprised me, knocked on my door Thanksgiving Day and said, surprise.
Found his dad on Facebook. We got all the inside scoop of him, and we planned this surprise visit.
And they all just came barreling into my house, which was absolutely amazing. So we ate a whole lot of food that couple of days. Ryan came to my office. I showed him, gave him a tour of the fire station, and he wrote some notes on some sticky notes and posted them all over my office, and I still have those notes.
I was the lead in the musical my junior year of high school, and he drove all the way to Nebraska for a two-hour performance and drove all the way back just to see me be the lead of the show. It's remarkable, just the relationship that we have. He came to my high school graduation, and that was probably the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
one of the most humbling experiences I've had was being at Ryan's graduation and seeing Ryan graduate and being in full dress uniform in a spot where his dad may have sat and seeing him, you know, walk across that stage graduating knowing, you know, his dad would have been here. And so seeing the other people that came with and we all kind of, you know, we met in Nebraska and went to be there for Ryan.
The hardest thing that I've ever went through now in my whole life was graduating from high school and being in that same gymnasium that my dad's funeral was in. The people that came that were fire service people were from the comfort zone camps, that were from the NFFF. You know, they drove, they flew all the way to the smallest town in Nebraska to watch me and my 28 other classmates graduate. And, you know, that meant the world to someone that's never experienced that whole fire service family before. Having Chad at my graduation was knowing that I had a mentor that helped me get to that point. I had obviously rough days. I had rough weeks. I had hard exams. I had big finals that I just needed that extra support, knowing that you can do this, you got this, buddy. Just keep going, study a little more, take a break, take a breather, walk outside. And just knowing that that constant support was there all the time. And I got to that finish line because of that support. And that finish line was walking across that stage with diploma in hand.
Ryan became a huge mentor of mine, although he might look at it differently. I find almost every day I use something that I learned from knowing Ryan and talking to Ryan as something that I teach or pass off to our firefighters or our staff on a daily basis.
Knowing about Chad is he's the mentor and the lifelong friend that I needed. He came into my life at a time that I didn't feel like I needed anybody else. I was content, but that kind of changed. He gave me more confidence in my life, confidence to share my story with other people. I've shared my story with people that are complete strangers. I've shared my story with people, you know, in a group of young adults. And he's just always been that constant encouragement that I've always needed that I never thought I would need. And it was just kind of that, like I said, he was always there in that corner and would always send that message to me at the right time when I needed something. You know, I was having a rough day and I just got a message that said, "Hey, I'm thinking about you." It was just a weird thing of events that just sparked, and they still happen to this day. You know, I have a big test coming up and, you know, I got a message, you know, just have a good day or just thinking about you. You know, that confidence booster, that encouragement is just something that it's so rare that you find in people. And it's this heart of gold, like this keeps going.
We have that kind of friendship and relationship that we don't call each other every day. We don't text each other every day. We just see a cool picture of a sunset or a snowy day or something. And or Ryan was, you know, getting ready to take a big test. And he just sent me a picture of, hey, getting ready to cram in this test. His first day of substitute teaching, I got a picture of his, you know, his ID badge.
On my first day of substitute teaching, I got a lanyard from the school district I work at. And I said, "Mr. Wild Leverage is coming soon." And he opened it right away and he just responded with a bunch of smiley faces and said that he was so, so proud of who I was becoming.
It never ceased to amaze me that I learned something, though, every single time I talked to Ryan. After the third or fourth year, you'd think, you know, you've heard his story enough times now. Are you really actually helping him? But every single time I came out of camp and I went, wow, that kid just, you know, he surprised me again. I learned something new. And it wasn't even so much I learned more about the incident that brought us together. It was I learned more about Ryan becoming more of his own person and having his own identity other than Kenny's kid.
Kenny's kid says he's continuing his father's legacy of service in a different way.
He was always there to help people. help people in that community. And I'm also doing the same thing, but in a different type of way. I feel like I'm helping shape the future of our next generation within four walls of a classroom. You never know what group of kids you're going to get in that classroom, but it's how you shape them into letting them leave your classroom at the end of the school year, knowing that, okay, I helped these students from, they came from ground zero to the highest point possible, and I did that. And I feel like I helped them achieve something. They didn't give up on themselves, and that's kind of like what my dad was. He never gave up on himself. He was always there for someone else and just kept going, just kept pushing through.
On the next episode of Grief in Progress, we'll meet Carol Jones. She followed in the footsteps of her dad and brothers and became a firefighter, one of the first 10 women to join the department in Fort Worth, Texas. She also knows all too well what firefighters and their widows go through when they lose someone in the line of duty. Thank you for listening to the Grief in Progress podcast, a production of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. If you've enjoyed this 6-episode season of the podcast, please consider subscribing and leaving a positive review. To learn more about the Grief in Progress podcast and the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, visit firehero.org.